We have a clip here now, and it's not the one that you just mentioned, but this is from your audiobook series. And well, it's in a market, and I don't think we need to set up anymore, except you're having a conversation with one of the women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Eric, how come there are no men shopping here?
Yeah?
How come there are no boys shopping?
I don't understand.
Where are the boys?
Boys.
Yeah, how come no boys shop today? Why are you laughing?
I'm surprised.
You're surprised? Are you surprised that I would think that boys would shop?
Yeah.
Thanks, Eric.
It's
So it gives people, I think, some perspective on the gender role divide and you know, that we think, well, some of us think that we've moved a bit past here in the U.S. in the Western world, but which, you know, to the extent to which we take for granted, at least, that it's not strictly a woman's role in most places, but so foreign a concept that it would be funny.
Right.
Or at least cause someone, you know, to sort of giggle in response.
Yeah.
Why I think it puts in perspective, I was so moved by reading the zines and reading the history and reading the new girl law and putting it all in perspective. And you know, especially with regard, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, how the women just not even aware or sort of even disinformed about the Khmer Rouge past, which is not so past, which is still present in the trials. So a very interesting project. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Risenel, and I'm your host. And today I'm speaking with Anne Elizabeth Moore. She is an independent media maker in many different forms. An author, her book, Unmarketable, Brandalism, Copyfighting, Marketing, and the Erosion of Integrity, the feel-good title of 2006, I think. as well, we've been talking about a project called Hale Cambodia, where she was able to work with women at a college in Cambodia making zines and working in independent media and self-expression. And you can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net and the radio shows at Radio.MediaGeek.net and a Twitter feed. Haven't been too active on it today, but it's at Twitter.com/MediaGeek. And if you have any comments, you can certainly tweet back there or twit back or whatever you like to do. If you have any comments about the program, of course, I'd love to hear them. Paul@MediaGeek.net. So I just finished your book. I just finished reading it here.
You got it out of the popular library.
I did get it out of the popular library because I'm surprised they let me in.
Well, you know,
but
don't let anybody into those things.
Well, you know, and and maybe you can sort of as best as you can sum up the sort of central thesis here of the book, and you know, because
we're all going to die.
Well, everyone,
oops, cut that.
Have fun. We got 19 minutes of fun left.
Okay, never mind.
Well, I mean, so you have these words in the title like brandalism, copy fighting, marketing. And a lot of people, I mean, you know, you can sort of figure out what they mean. But there may not be words that the average person has been exposed to, even the fairly media savvy, media geek listener.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm a writer because I like to play with language. And so you come across sort of a weird permutation of some word that people actually know, like brandalism. You're familiar with vandalism, but you think brandalism. Well, I guess that does make a certain amount of sense. And copy fighting. Well, yeah, okay. You know, that fits into some of the big copyright debates over the past couple of years. And marketing is where it gets a little bit trickier. Because, of course, marketing is when companies actually start to pay humorists to make fun of their product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that for me is where we get into some really interesting territory, especially if we look at the example of Mad magazine, which of course I grew up with, absolutely 100% taught me how to react to my culture in a way that was, you know, ironic and but engaged enough to be having a debate at all. And, you know, humorously taking these elements of pop culture that sort of forced themselves into my life and responding to them. And now what we have is a media system that's so commercialized and so perverse that now that is the desired outcome, that being targeted on not necessarily the pages of Mad Magazine, although that does happen as well, but on Mad TV is where the term marketing actually originally came from, is the best kind of marketing that can happen. And why? Because I read Mad Magazine when I was younger. You
and
know?
Now you're the target.
Now I'm the target. So that's why I bought my Yaris. So thank you for asking that question.
Well, I had missed that particular episode of Mad TV, I think. And it was for marketing for the Toyota. It's their relatively inexpensive subcompact model, the Yaris. And I guess it had been used in a skit on Mad TV.
Right. A particularly unfunny skit, if one can say that about Mad TV at all, that there are parts that are less funny than others. But yeah, basically sort of a mishmash of joking about actual features that the car really has and sort of saying snarky things. And and for me, like, it's a problem because it's commercializing every aspect of our environment, fine. But what I didn't necessarily get to say and what I didn't make the point of the book, but what I feel most violently is that it's ruining language and comedy. Like, these things just aren't funny anymore. And so where can we actually turn for humor and for relief from these things? You know, well, certainly not Mad TV, I suppose,
right.
ever.
So
but
if Toyota and the Yaris are comedy and Nike is punk,
yeah,
where are we left for our comedy and our punk? Is that sort of the question?
Well, I mean, you know, it sort of puts too much faith in Nike and,
sure,
and Mad TV to decry them that thoroughly. But, but
yeah,
what it does do is it lowers the general level of literacy and of comedy, which, you know, of course, are related situations.
Well, there's always been this tension, right? I mean, at some level, I mean, there's been underground culture for a long time. And some folks engage in it as a real response or rejection of mainstream culture, commercialized culture, capitalist culture. Some folks engage in it because they're hoping it's a route,
yeah,
you know, that's a route in, that, you know, it's a farm league, if you will. And, you know, certainly I think a lot of people engage in do-it-yourself culture because they feel as an outsider and they don't fit in. And maybe even some have a, you know, I don't want to psychologize this too much, but, you know, wouldn't mind being accepted, ultimately.
Oh, sure.
And it seems like, in a way, marketing's embracing of underground culture preys on that, takes advantage of it, and in a way, because as well, I mean, folks who grew up with this culture, like you and I did, are working for the bad agencies,
right,
themselves, you know, and for them, I don't think it's not always as cynical, although probably it is. You know, there's many examples in your book here of
cynicism.
Well, where it seems like there's a very big gray area of whether the folks in the ad agencies or the corporations at hand, whether they are you know, skateboard enthusiasts working for Nike or they're you know, working in another campaigns, whether they are cynically taking advantage or whether there's also an element of love. And that doesn't necessarily excuse it, but an element of love in all of it, where because this is culture that they too were engaged in, perhaps, you know, when younger or still engage in, although it's part of their other life, not their work life.
Right. Yeah, and that that gray area is really fascinating to me, because it's important to realize that it's been very, very good for our government and for commercial media and for commercialism in general, for us to believe that these entities are monolithic and that we don't have an in into them and that we have no control over what they do or how they operate. And so realizing that actually they're not just moving into these cultures and taking them over. It's people who feel genuine ownership over them that are making weird decisions that create this humongous gray area that now encompasses most of our culture, I think. And so the issue isn't necessarily about like who ripped off what and whether or not they sold out. But the issue is about, are these people actually believing that they're making decisions with some sense of integrity, or have they lost that sense entirely? Well, you know, and that's the problem. During the time that I was writing this book, the word integrity was the most looked up word in the online Merriam-Webster dictionary. People literally don't know what it means anymore. And so trying to revive that notion in a cultural context was a way of trying to say, like, hey, marketing dude, I know you're running this big ad agency and you're totally making all this money and that's awesome and I actually support you and I do think you probably make more interesting ads than the guy you beat out for the position whenever you were hired for it. But are you sure you want to be making all of these decisions? You know, because you're making some really weird stuff happen in our culture. And like, maybe if you really genuinely thought about the impact of what you were doing to media and to these communities you claim to care about, maybe you would make different decisions. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, it was this call to like, just reconsider.
Right.
Using everything all the time.
And, you know, the book has been out for about 3 years and you probably finished writing it
Not
even two. Yeah. Okay. So I was.
But I did finish writing it about 3 years ago.
About 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I would say my own perspective is it's gotten worse, not better.
Significantly worse.
You know, so I hang out in the Twitter sphere. I hang out in the blogosphere, and I have for a very
long
time.
Because you want to follow when people are going to Starbucks and when they're not. It's that crazy.
It's that crazy. And what's crazier is that, so, Ford just had a big promotion where they're giving their new, is it the Focus or whatever, new subcompact car, the Fiesta.
Oh, yeah.
They're reintroducing the Fiesta. And ahead of time, they, solicited entries on YouTube of people saying why they needed a Fiesta for a year. And lots of folks who I think engage in some level of DIY culture, maybe not so radical, but not necessarily inherently so commercial either, went forth and made clever videos and some maybe 40, 100, I don't even know, get the car for a year, but, you know, and some amount of gas, and they're supposed to document their wacky adventures in their new Ford Fiesta.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it, of course, it engages Twitter, engages blogs, it engages YouTube. And I think if they thought anyone would read them, it would engage zines. Absolutely. Mm. You know, it's just that it's not the hot technology, hot medium of the moment. And, you know, I watch it pass by every day, and especially in the Twitter sphere, as much as I'm trying to use it for other purposes, I am constantly inundated with new followers who their bio is, I'm a social networking maven. I'm a social networking guy. I'm a social media marketer. I mean,
I get a lot of gurus.
Like every fifth idiot is a social networking expert. And as far as I can tell, all they're good at is getting a lot of followers and then losing them. But, yeah, I mean, we're like, it's like an expressway here. And I wonder if it's not to some extent because people are tired of not having any money, but
yeah,
something
I mean,
else
I think
here.
That's big. Yeah. I think I believe that both Facebook and Twitter have just benefited greatly from the fact that they're still able to do things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But right, I mean the Twitter trending topics thing, is more often than not a product.
Star Trek,
not,
Grey's Anatomy,
right?
Hawks, Cavaliers. College Humor, Drew Peterson, and Hell's Kitchen right
some
now.
Some kind of brand. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And I've been sort of taking a back seat to those arguments. For one, because I feel like Actually, I don't have anything new to say. Like, we could change the players around a little bit, but we do have to, it is still an issue of personal integrity, especially for bloggers and especially for people on Twitter. But I also sort of feel this sense that, like, that people are really bummed out. They're so much more bummed out than we're allowing ourselves to realize. That, like, if it actually is going to make you happy to Twitter about Starbucks, like, I'm probably not going to harangue you. I won't read your Twitter feed anymore. But, I mean, it's a rough time, I think. Unfortunately, I think the way that we're getting out of this is by sort of amping up the commercialism to a ridiculous degree. And we're allowing it then to further infiltrate into social media, regular media, and daily lives. But
it's a bit like deforestation. Eventually, you run out of trees.
And then there's nothing to... what are we going to build stuff out of?
I told you I was a little depressed when I got to the end of here.
I know. I mean, I was depressed, too, which is, you know, I went to Cambodia. So maybe you should go there.
Because it engages the question of, those of us who are interested in independent media and creating media, and it's non-commercial, not merely as a political act only, but that there's it has to do with issues of one, having some level of intellectual freedom and also political freedom. But the sense that I guess I'm not totally getting at the right point, but that. It doesn't have to be commercial. It can be absent commercialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there does not have to be this payday at the end, although it's nice to eat and have healthcare and such.
Well, and I think what we're seeing on social media is that the payday and the paycheck that's supposed to come on it is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
Anyway.
We're fighting over pennies.
We're fighting over pennies. And I sort of have been assuming / hoping / praying that we'd figure that out and we'd stop the fighting and we'd just abandon that system and we'd create a new economy of social justice. But it hasn't happened yet and it's really a bummer. However, what's interesting...
we got about 1 minute for you to bring us all up now for the uplifting moment.
Well, I just think that people are coming together in this really interesting way. Mm-hmm. And that there is all this talk about media and social media and all of this sort of questions about how we communicate. A lot of these discussions are happening in a very personal way. And when I'm engaged in those meetings or discussions, they're really fun. And they're funner than any discussions that I've had when there was a viable newspaper industry or when there was actually a working print industry in general. And so there is a change happening, but I can't quite get my head around what it is yet, but I think it's very exciting, actually.
And I'd like to continue this conversation if you're willing to come back.
Absolutely, I would love to.
I think I've enjoyed it, and I think we have much more territory to mine.
Fantastic, let's do it.
Okay, and you have an online presence?
I do. I have a small blog called Democracy Guest List that you can check out. You can follow my Twitter feed, which I basically talk about my coffee intake, which I make myself. and I'm always doing stuff. Google me. It's really easy to find what I'm doing.
AnnElizabethMoore.com.
Yeah.
I'm glad you went in and staked your claim early.
Well, you know, I had to buy it off of somebody, some poor kid.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.